We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. All right, our lesson, getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. Several folks have told me what's making them uncomfortable these days. And one of the things that is a recurring theme is these protests and the counter-protests that are going on in the streets right now. And corollary to that is what's happening online. And the response that I've heard is, really? We're doing this when we're having a global pandemic? Really? We're doing this when we're having an economic flame out? This is what we choose to do? Well, like a lot of people, I've got ways that I avoid my fear, that I don't pay attention to my fear. But I'm trying really hard to pay attention these days. I kind of work hard to keep those thoughts out of my mind. Well, I am. I'm afraid. I'm worried about a second wave or a third. I'm worried about how we collectively will pay our bills. I'm worried about businesses that won't be coming back from this and how that's going to affect our economy. But even so, I shared this post on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. If you're listening in the car, the heading says, Apocaloptimist. The definition says, someone who knows it's going to shit, but still thinks things will turn out okay. Well, that's kind of me. Well, here's why. You probably won't be surprised. It has to do with history. Our social systems haven't been working for a while now. Worldview shift, you've heard me talk about that in the past. Our economy isn't really keeping up with the changes going on in our society. Our economy works really well in places that are organized around innovation, where people go to work every day thinking up things that don't yet exist. But a lot of places in our nation aren't organized around innovation, and consequently, there's a widening gap between economies that work and those that don't. And that's what's driving a lot of the tension that's going on in our nation these days. There are more basic systems that are not working. Simple issues of equity. Take food, for example. It's readily available in some places, food deserts in other places. Take education. Now more important than ever, as we move into kind of a education demanding economy. But it's also indenturing our young people. We've got legislation that's designed to work for contributors more than it works for citizens. We've got white kids jogging in neighborhoods, and we've got black kids jogging in neighborhoods, and we've got these glaring racial inequities. The social systems and the institutions that enforce those social systems or service those social institutions were designed in one worldview, and they're not working as a new worldview is emerging. So much change, and it's happening so fast. Things were painful before the virus. Even with all the talk of getting back to normal, if we're honest with ourselves, normal wasn't working before the virus. But what the virus is doing is kind of stripping away the pretense that it ever was. Now, I really believe better days are coming. But they won't get here by us going back to normal, going back to the way things were. Our better days happen when we move forward. Here's what it is. We've talked about this in the past. It's thesis, the way things have been. It's antithesis or antithesis when we realize that things have to change and we begin to push up against thesis. And then there's all this chaos and all this conflict that goes on. And then out of that, there comes some synthesis, some way of being. We will eventually create a new world, and it will work for us. But right now, we're in the conflict chaos part of the process. And conflict and chaos are frightening. We cannot get away from those things that stimulate our fear responses at this moment in history. They are baked right into how history is unfolding right now. Too much change, too much, too fast. It's frightening. Widening gaps between economies. That's frightening. Gaps of respect. Who gets to be heard and who doesn't get to be heard? Who has access and who doesn't have access? There are things that used to be a normalized part of society that, as our worldview has changed, we can no longer tolerate, and that creates change, and that creates conflict, and that creates chaos, and that is frightening. We cannot get away from fear in this historical moment. But here's the thing. This kind of conflict and chaos, it is how big historical change happens. I'm an apocalyptic optimist because the pandemic is stripping bare what hasn't been working. When there is not a pandemic, we have the luxury of infighting with one another about the ideology of healthcare. But when it comes down to we are going to live or we are going to die, we stop caring about ideology and we try and figure out what is going to work. We can, when there's no pandemic, fight about the ideological tension between individual liberty and a social safety net. And we can keep having that fight in the luxurious non-pandemic times. But when we face our own Great Depression and our own breadlines, all of a sudden, a pandemic creates an opportunity to get past our ideological rigidity and start trying to figure out what is going to work in our new world. So I am an optimist. I am an apocalyptic optimist, and I am hopeful. It is sad to say, but historical change, the kind of change we need to have a world work for us, usually requires some kind of existential threat. It usually happens in the aftermath of war or famine or hunger or plague. Now, if you can do anything to mitigate the pain of your own life or the pain of the lives around you, do it now, and tell everybody know what you did so they can do it with you. We are, as a community, trying hard. We're trying to feed school kids. We're trying to organize for the well-being of the civic sector. But at a deeper level, that's not how this level of change is going to happen. This level of change happens in the hearts of a whole society. We don't just pass a law and things get better. That kind of change doesn't work in this magnitude of need. We don't just discover the internet and now magically everyone becomes wise and unified. No, it doesn't happen that way. It happens like yeast happens. Jesus kind of said this. One wisdom is shared and it becomes two wisdoms. And then two wisdoms become four. One courage is shared and it multiplies. One kindness becomes two kindnesses. Two compassions become four. Four looking out for one another becomes eight. Eight understanding the thing under the other person's thing becomes 16. That's how historical change happens. Our hearts and our minds begin to adapt in a way that helps us work in a new reality, a new oneness reality, a new in-it-together reality. Now, that can feel really discouraging when you're living through it because it takes a long, long time. And I am really sorry that this historical moment requiring these historical changes of us do not lend themselves to quick and easy fixes. This is just not one of those times in history. It's one of these times. But what that does inform is how we can be people of our time. How we can be people of our time. People who help society move forward instead of holding society back from the change that is set before us. And that is what spirituality has to say to this moment that we are living through. And here's a critical issue that spiritual people know about, discern, figure out. Our real enemy is fear. And the way to we defeat our enemy is with virtue. Our real enemy is fear, and the way we defeat our enemy is virtue. So, yet again, let's talk about the thing under the thing. Here's a thing. You're all fear-mongers. You're overreacting. This is governmental overreach. My rights, my constitution. Here's another thing. You are so stupid. Can't you see the bigger picture? My mom has a heart condition. Wait, your mom has a heart condition too. What the hell is wrong with you? You think a paycheck is more important than life itself. And those are pretty well-rehearsed scripts, and you're hearing a lot of it, and you're seeing a lot of it on your newsfeed. And they get amplified by people who are interested in keeping us all worked up, because worked up people will click and worked up people will tune in. So there's a vested interest in keeping us worked up. But those scripts are also well rehearsed because of the way that our brains work. Those scripts strengthen our place on our team. Here's something that happens when our brains are afraid. We evolved in times of fear, in times of threat, to attach ourselves to a team. We carry within our bodies and in our brains a deep impulse in times of threat to circle the wagons so that we can be with us and we can fight against them. It's instinct. It's inside of us. Not particularly spiritual, but it's inside of us. It's a thing. It's a real thing, but it's not the thing under the thing. The spiritual tradition has long been telling us that when we look under the thing and we're looking for the thing under that, we should be looking for fear. We should be looking for some fear coping strategy, some fear suppressing strategy. In the notes, in the live stream notes, I put a link to a David Brooks article that cites several polls from just the last few days. They tell us that we're not as divided as the news would indicate. We have a very divisive president, which gets a lot of press coverage. We have protests and counter-protests in the streets, and that gets a lot of press coverage. But polls tell us that the vast majority of both Democrats and Republicans want social distancing rules, and they want them enforced. 90% of Americans think a second wave is at least somewhat likely if we end lockdowns too early. 89% of both Republicans and Democrats support federal aid packages. And those who have lost their jobs, this was surprising to me, are just as supportive of quarantine policies as people who haven't lost their jobs. But you know what? That doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter that we're less divided than we believe we are, because we don't believe it. The story we tell ourselves about one another, the perception that we hold of one another, is pretty awful. We may not even disagree, but we definitely hate one another. A study cited in the article shows that both Republicans and Democrats substantially exaggerate how much the other side hates them. And of course, then, once they hate us, what are we going to do but hate them back? Both sides substantially exaggerate how strongly the other side disagrees with them. So it doesn't really matter that we disagree less, because we hate more. Now again, that's just a thing. The thing that drives it, the thing under the thing, is our enemy. The thing under it is fear. The thing under it is our instinct to gather with us and fight against them. The impulse, the chemicals that surge through our bodies that make us do that thing. We're afraid. Maybe for good reason. We're afraid of losing control in our lives. Some person or people who will take agency from us. Now we're afraid. Maybe we're afraid of something much more bread and butter, like losing our home or feeding our kids. But it doesn't matter what is the trigger that makes us afraid. When we are afraid, here's what our brains do. We scan the horizon, and we look for allies, and we look for adversaries. It's instinct. It is so ingrained inside of us that we will create adversaries, and we will create allies even if they don't exist. we evolved under threat to band together and to fight something that threatens us. It kept us alive as hunter-gatherers, but it may kill us in a globalized society. So, our spiritual tradition has long taught us you got to know your enemy. And your enemy is not the fear-mongering quarantiners. And your enemy is not the reopen anti-quarantiners. That's just the thing. The enemy is the fear that drives the whole system. Fear drives us to categorize the other: stupid, heartless. And then we say those words with our mouths. And when we say them with our mouths, we hear them with our ears, and they go into our brains, and we begin to believe them. And the next thing you know, we show up to the Capitol building with an assault rifle. But again, the other is just the thing. The thing under the thing is fear. Know your enemy. That's the wisdom of our spiritual tradition. And the corollary truth: your enemy is not the other. The stupid person doing the stupid thing, not your enemy. You do stupid things. I do stupid things. People we love do stupid things. But when our team does something stupid, just out of character. But when our brains are hyped up on fear, we need an adversary, and we need their stupid things to be evil. We need their stupid things to be totally bad. We need their stupid things to be naive and heartless and uncaring. They don't care about life the way we care about life. They can't see the big picture like we can see the big picture. That is our adversary. Fear-hyped brains masquerading as brilliant analysts of the way things really are. But in reality, they're just lazy brains. We're just doing what comes naturally. We're instinctively following this well-worn chemical path in our heads, serving some evolutionary instinct. The spiritual tradition, on the other hand, is not lazy. It is demanding. It's a narrow path, our texts say. So here's a tension that's built up in every society. As soon as we organize anything bigger than hunter-gatherer bands, we have to balance the needs of the individual with the needs of the group. Now, it is a tension in every organized society, but it's a tension that we want to be there. We want that tension because no one among us wants group conformity at the expense of personal choice. But also, no one among us wants individual autonomy that harms the whole. So it's a tension, and it goes through time as a give and take. At some times, a society will move more toward individual autonomy and more toward group cohesion. We go back and forth, and we keep that tension in place. It's a tension we want because we want both of those things. But once our brains are hyped up on fear, we take that tension and we weaponize it. We turn it into us versus them. We are the individual liberty people. We are right, and they are destroying the nation. We are the good of the whole people. We are right, and they are destroying the nation. Again, our brains on fear need allies and adversaries. So we'll take a very natural, built-in tension, and that'll do. Then we come up with our scripts. And we say, "Don't tread on me." That's one of them. And then we march and we spout the scripts. Now, polls tell me that I am speaking to a large majority when I say this. Those protesters not practicing social distancing, not caring about other people, stupid, selfish. Now, the argument that the protesters are making, constitutional liberty, is probably not the best argument they could be making. I posted a link to another article. It's in the New England Journal of Medicine. If you're listening in the car, the title is COVID-19, The Law and Limits of Quarantine. It's about the role of government in historical quarantines, and it turns out quarantine is kind of a case study in that delicate balance between my rights and our rights. But again, getting caught up in that tension, it's just the script. It's just the stories that are told by the brain on fear. Whether it's my rights or our rights is not the thing. I saw a local reporter who got under the thing. He was interviewing a couple of sisters using one of those big boom poles, And those two sisters, they run a shop together, and they've got three little kids between the two of them. And at first, during the interview, all that came out of their mouths was ideology, ideology, ideology. And it was a pretty uninformed ideology at that. But as the interview progressed, it was easy to see that raw fear was just under the surface. Lose customers, lose income, lose insurance, one of the kids gets sick, utilities get turned off, food. Their little shop that they run together keeps those three children alive. Now that's a story we can all understand. It's a visceral fear that we can all get. If their story was scripted badly, if they had some kind of an unresearched ideology, oh well, we all do that. But we also understand that every one of us would face that same fear when it comes to not being able to take care of children. Know your enemy, the spiritual tradition tells us, and it's not the other. It's fear, and it's all the strategies that surge up inside of us when we're afraid. So know your own fear. Find your thing under the thing. And be patient with the fear and the fear responses of the other. That's how we get through this thing and come out a better people. All right, so how to make that practical? That's the question I asked our Wednesday Zoom callers. How can we bring our best selves to this polarized moment? It was a really good discussion. They practically wrote today's lesson. Here's one of the first things that came out. We can humanize the other. We can humanize the other. We have inside of ourselves a deep scapegoating instinct. We look for someone or we look for something onto which we can project all of our inner ugliness. But the core of our Christian narrative, the whole death of Jesus story, was about gutting, scapegoating forever. We are, our narrative tells us, every one of us, carriers of indwelling divine. So to scapegoat tax collectors or stewards or adulterers or Rome collaborators, stop it, our story tells us. They are just like we are. We are carriers of the Spirit of Christ Jesus. They are carriers of the same Spirit that was in Christ Jesus. So stop. Scapegoating is done. Don't shame other people. Don't blame. Don't belittle. Don't demean. Don't jump on some social media post and say, yeah, see how stupid those people are? They are so mean-spirited. They are so heartless. No. Don't do it. That is not our heritage. Chris Grabe said it in the discussion this way. At a base minimum, he said, if we take seriously following Jesus, we liberals, and he was speaking for liberals, but it's just as true for conservatives, we don't mock and we don't demean. We don't demean the guy who brings an assault weapon into the Capitol building. No, we do the hard work to get past our scripts, and we do the hard work of seeing that he, just like me, carries the indwelling divine. In fact, he is Jesus' disciple, Simon the Zealot. He is just following a very common fear brain path, the sword, to which Jesus said, yeah, Simon, that's not really going to work out for you. You live by the sword, you're going to end up dying by the sword. Look, friend, there is a much better way. But here's what Jesus didn't say. Stupid Simon, bad Simon, heartless and naive Simon. No. Jesus found the light inside of Simon and invited him in when he was out, made him part of the crew, which was shrewd, Jesus, because demeaning, we've all seen, it just doesn't work. It doesn't change behavior, and in fact, it entrenches it. So what do we do in times like these? First, we know our enemy, and our enemy is fear, and we know who our enemy is not. It is not the other. Second, we do the work to be able to rise above our own fear brain instincts, our own fear brain scripts. Third, we extend patience to the other. while they are grappling with their own fear brain instincts. We rise above that intrinsic, ingrained adversary ally instinct. We look for the thing under the thing. We look for the humanity that we all share with the other. Fourth, we stop using derogatory language about the other. Now, we've got a president who calls people names. That does not make it right. Don't do it. Don't call people libtards or heartless bastards. Just don't. Because our language feeds our brains, and our brains shape our days. Don't do it. Feed yourself on a better diet. We're not just talking about civility here, though civility is nice. We're talking about what we feed our brains. Now, here's a pro tip. If the place that you get your news is ideological, you are probably feeding your fear brain script. If your news or your social media feed is telling you that your people are good and the other people are bad, get your news somewhere else. Stop feeding your fear brain. Stop calling it ideology when, in fact, it's just a tired old script that humans have been using from the beginning of time to help them avoid having to deal with their interior fear. Here's a paraphrase of Paul's love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. If you have all the right ideology, the primo ideology, the best ideology, and you don't have love, you've got shit. You've got nothing. Feed your brain on something better. Feed your brain on love for your neighbor. Feed your brain on love for your enemy. Don't take the path of least resistance. Don't be a lazy brain. Do the demanding thing, the hard thing. Keep moving forward instead of holding us as a society back. Now, there's a reason we've done the welcome prayer every week since quarantine started, because it is a powerful way to feed our fear brains on love. I've had several conversations this week. Doug, you've been hammering on that welcome prayer thing, eye roll. But then, you know, Doug, this week, as I was working through a conflict that I've been having and as I was doing the self-awareness, you know, this week, as I was feeling shame and being really hard on myself, this week, as I was, boy, Doug, you're right, that is a powerful spiritual tool. And it is. So stop using derogatory language. Stop feeding your brain with people who do use derogatory language. Practice the welcome prayer. Work the circle. Feed your brain something better than fear. Get comfortable with the discomfort of fear. And do something higher, better. Train our bodies, train our minds. And this is what I've been praying. I've been praying that we may come out of this virus better people than we were when we went in. Kinder people, more gracious, less triggered, more access to inner peace. All so we can bring our best selves to creating a better world for those around us right now, but also for those who come after us in history. I pray that it would be so. Amen. I am sure that I will be chastised by my wife for using the word shit two times in one lesson. Oh, well, here we go. So if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. And what we mean by that is if you get to keep your job, spiritual community is an integral part of the well-being of our lives and our souls. And spiritual community does have financial demands. We ask one another to contribute to the well-being of community, which is our time and our love and our energy, yes, and just the practical reality that it also takes dollars. So if you get to keep your job, as I say all the time, I think our community is a good place to invest. That being said, so what are you thinking about? What is being stirred up in your heart? And hopefully Gene has sent me some things of the text. Yes, sure enough. Let's see. Let me go. Oh, wow, quite a few of them. Let me go to the top here. Let's see. Tony says, I too have a son that I'm afraid for, not to mention my two male grandkids being raised in America. It's easy. By the way, if you don't know, Tony is an African-American man. Disproportionate incidences of COVID-19 and being hunted by racist killers. I can't imagine getting comfortable with this. We are in the middle of what seems to be an interminable struggle. Well, I hope, Bob, that what you heard during the lesson is it's not interminable, but it's a whole lot longer than we think it's going to be. Angie says, and because it's longer, we really need to be people of our time. This is what is happening in history. We need to be the people who transcend fear and all of our fear responding reactions. And we need to do it because there is an urgent need for people who can bring the divine, the truth, virtue to bear on a very polarizing moment. I don't think comfort with injustice is an answer. It goes against the inner divine. Absolutely, Angie says. Katie says, I've found, as an Enneagram 8, and by the way, if you don't know about the Enneagram, those are the people who really hate being vulnerable and really like being in control. Yeah, I am one of those. It can make us a little bit insufferable. Anyway, Katie says, as an 8, I have found that I have to lean into the death of my ego tendency to fight and to fight against control so that peace and love of the Spirit can move forward gently. That's exactly what I'm talking about, Katie. I'm talking about the rising above what is natural. What I tried to say today in the lesson, and I think you may have heard it, was we think we're being brilliant analysts when all we're doing is following into these old historical patterns that have been around as long as human beings have been around, because we are all wired with brains and bodies and thought patterns. And, you know, as one of the texts says, there's really nothing new under the sun. We've been doing this same script for thousands of years. So it isn't really brilliant, analytical to point out all the flaws. That's easy. The scripts come easily. We gravitate to somebody who articulates a good one. We glom onto them. They become an us. And now all we do is then look at them. They become a them. Again, that's what lazy brains do. So exactly what you're talking about is that we need to find that place within us that is more demanding, more difficult. And so a few of the things that I mentioned today are just practical disciplines. Stop with the derogatory language. That's just a practical discipline. But the work actually happens much deeper. At some point, we realize that we are them and they are us. Oneness is a better description of reality. We find these bigger frameworks. So, yes. Let's see. Chris says, mentioning James Baldwin reminds me of the great quote, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." Maybe this is the crux of the welcome prayer. Chris, you can also post, I think I'm going to mention it in next week's lesson, that any a thought email that you got, maybe you could put that up as well, because I thought that's helpful, because what we realize is we go and look at our things, we find the greater truth. Rebecca Patera says, the patience piece is where I get stuck the most. Oh, poor Rebecca. Not like the rest of us. The rest of us just sail right through patience. But you, Rebecca, you must have a real problem not being able to be patient. let's see here. Jeff Murrell says, Doug said stupid so many times that my son kept saying, stop using the S word. So tell your son I am quoting other people. I wasn't saying those people were stupid. Anyway, we're coming up on, it is time. It's 11 o'clock. So if you would, please put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go together that we are all carriers of the indwelling divine. Every one of us carries love and joy and peace, kindness, goodness, courage, wisdom, resource, strength. They're all in us because the divine is in us. And then if you would, extend your other hand to the people who live in our city. And let's look for opportunities this week to share what is in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, the people with whom we share our city. looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We're dismissed. Love one another as you go, which means private message somebody that you saw on the newsfeed scroll or on the comment scroll. And it means head on over to What Are You Thinking and participate in the Zoom chat there. God bless you. We're dismissed. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.